drums, please. Hi, it's me, Ashkenazi, your favourite North London Jewish queen. I am here to bring to you the secrets from the Pink Room.
Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room, Pink Room, Pink Room, not the Stink Room. Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room, Pink Room, Pink Room, with Ashkenazi.
Hello, my bubblers, it's me, Ashkenazi, reminding you that you're free to do what you want with your body. Welcome to the Pink Room, the queerest backstage since the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. It's the final episode of the season, and as anti-trans legislation sweeps across the US and Scotland's Gender Recognition Act is blocked by the UK government, I chose to bump up a guest I was saving for season 3. The goddess Maxine Herrin, model, makeup influencer, trans icon, and self-titled digital nomad doll. We spoke about our adventure celebrating Maxine's 12-year transition anniversary, how to effectively fail the 11+, dating as a trans woman, and how we can work together to bring an end to the questioning of trans bodily autonomy. Let's breathe together now. For the last time in the season, here it is, Maxine Herrin in the Pink Room with me, Ashkenazi. Welcome, Max Queen, to the Pink Room.
Are we officially, is it happening? Did we, is we starting?
When are you ready?
I'm ready now. No, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Do you want to do a vocal technique to quick breathe
down? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, let's do it. I think I'm still in work mode. I need a little zenification from Ashkenazi.
Let's breathe together. Okay, ready?
Let's do it.
Breathe in. 2, 3, 4, and hold. 2, 3, 4, and out. And again. One more time for all the girlies.
Let's do it. That was gorgeous. You should become a yoga instructor or something. Maybe like a breathwork diva.
To be honest, I need to go to a silent retreat. Yeah. Have you ever done a silent retreat?
No, but I was just watching Eat, Pray, Love because I'm currently in Barcelona and I feel like I'm living my Eat, Pray, Love fantasy on the continent. But that's part of it where she does like a silent retreat and I think she's in Indonesia and I was like, that sounds so nice. So I get the appeal.
It's very appealing. So what look are you giving today? It says Barcelona Evanescence to me.
My look is, I'm currently wearing running gear because I thought I would go for a run today, but it is like 6:10 PM and I have not yet been, but I'm keeping it on in the vain hope that at some point today I will go on a run. So I'm giving yoga mum, that's what I'm giving. And like, I low-key put some makeup on when you said we might record some visuals. I was like, oh my god, and you look insane. And I look, yeah, I'm giving very sweaty Betty vibes.
So I recreated our 12 years of pussy epic evening of adventure. It was a story unto itself. That was one of the greatest experiences of my life, to be able to share with you that moment. It felt so powerful.
It was powerful, wasn't it? Wasn't it such a reset?
Taking a rickshaw while listening to Cobra and Hot Puss, and the girls were girling, the dolls were dolling. We slayed at the box to celebrate the installation of your box.
That's correct. Yeah, I know, we did. And it was hot. It was fun. I was wearing some big black eyeliner and people kept being like, wow, you look like Julia Fox. And I was like, really? Me? I didn't even know. I didn't even think of that. Oh my God. And it's like, I literally had a picture of her up while I was doing my makeup that evening. Like, I hope to God one gay person told me I look like Julia Fox this evening. And they did. So that was really good.
I wish that I had a second birthday that wasn't just the day I was born. It feels really powerful to have a day to represent yourself as a trans woman.
Well, particularly because my actual date of birth is in January, which is just the worst month of the year. So for me to have my vagina's birthday in June is the greatest gift. I also kind of have an outiversary. I like to celebrate myself as much as I can and make it about me at any given opportunity. So I like came out publicly about being trans on the 24th of October, 2018. So kind of I'm trying to work something into the end of the Q1, you know, springtime part of the year. I haven't yet figured that out, but so far I've got something every quarter. So yeah, it's going well. Would recommend.
I wanted to bring up a situation that happened on that day that maybe I was very aware of it because it was a celebration of Maxine and all things womanhood. And even on that day, we went to a bar, we sat outside, we were having cute time. The owner came and started handing us drinks, and then his friend walked over and immediately started just questioning your femininity from my perspective. And I think I was very heightened to the situation, so maybe you didn't experience that. But she was like going, oh, how did you get this face shape? And, you know, you look incredibly, you know, different and etc. And I was like, girl, why are you questioning this beautiful woman? What is your goal here?
Yeah, so I didn't notice that. I don't think I even, did I spill? I don't remember saying, oh, I'm out for my vagina's birthday. Did I tell her?
We did say that, but they couldn't clock. They were too Soho to even understand the concept of what we were doing.
Got it. I mean, I'm quite unashamed about being trans. So, I mean, yeah, when it's my vagina's birthday, I do tell people. But yeah, I don't remember telling her. And I remember her saying to me, I didn't even know if it was a trans thing, but she was just like, wow, you have such an unusual face. The angle of your cheek goes in a very different direction to the angle of your jaw. And I find that really interesting. And I was kind of like, are you going to tell me I'm pretty or not? Like, this is strange. What a weird way to sort of compliment someone. Are you negging me? I didn't get it, but yeah, it was a strange encounter. I thought it was overall quite like a positive experience, but mainly I loved just how many people, because you were dressed in this getup that you're wearing now, like full on Ashkenazi mode. Yeah, very that. And literally everyone that walked past was taking pictures with you and going like, yes, queen.
It was cute, but it got me thinking. I was thinking back to that, and somehow I feel like there's this constant questioning of womanhood that is part of the patriarchy, which I think plays into this constant debate around what a woman is, and it's driving me insane at the moment. Like, I remember I was on Twitter. It was like 2 a.m, and Penny Morden just has the audacity to go, you know, to tweet at 2 a.m, is, do I know what a woman is? And I replied being like, I know plenty of women who can tell you exactly, and most of them are trans. And as someone who I think gives out womanhood constantly, exudes womanhood, I would like to hear how you would define it and what it means to you.
Yeah, so you're asking me what a woman is. Is that correct, Ash?
I'm asking.
You're asking me what... I'm joking. So basically, I think that what really binds trans women and their experience with cisgender women and femmes of all different diversities, I think what really binds us together in our shared experience is kind of our shared proximity to which men let us down, to which a lot of sexism and shame, and I think we have a lot of the same shared fears and concerns. And, you know, if you speak to me or any of my trans friends, we often are disadvantaged in many of the same ways as cisgender women are. And it's so frustrating that so many trans exclusionary radicalists really don't see that. So I think that a big part of the knowledge that you're a woman comes from the really kind of firm understanding with yourself that you're definitely not a man, because there's no way that you're this person who's currently treating you like they might be treating you. Like, I think of like how I came to understand that I was trans. Like, it was, I was about six when I first put into words that I was a girl to my mum. And like, I think that what really informed my understanding that I was a girl and not a boy was like, I just saw this very binary gendered experience. And I saw the boys, you know, boying, and all the girls were girling. And I was like, I'm just not one of those boys. This is not me. And it was something, you know, I've always been the same. I feel like my understanding of gender and my understanding of gender identity is that my identity was formed by whatever forces of nature, nurture, whatever else it is that comprises an identity. I feel like that was formed by any forces that were greater than myself and created me and who I am. And that the same can be said for any other woman out there, whether you're cisgender or transgender. Your identity is shaped by so many forces that are greater than you are, and the only thing that makes you trans or not trans is like your adjacency to that majority felt experience. Like, I feel like my female identity is the exact same as any other woman's female identity, but the only thing that separates me is the fact that people didn't see that coming. So yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, it's so difficult. Like, I really don't believe that the gender binary needs to exist as firmly as it does. I think it really inhibits a lot of us in so many different ways, puts us into boxes that so many people don't need to be in. I think identities are so much more nuanced than that. I think they exist beyond this very binary description that we have for people, the categories. I personally believe that it could be possible that there are as many genders in the world as there are people on the planet. But yeah, the term of womanhood really feels like the nearest one to me. And I think, yeah, it's a feeling and it's a knowledge of where you fit on that binary.
Take that, Penny Mordaunt.
I don't know. Like, I still feel like, you know, I also can't argue with crazy. Like, I get so many comments on my socials all the time. Like, I get mainly from men lately that have come, you know, I get some really quite confronting and quite frightening messages sometimes from people who I just realize are so, you know, unwell. It's really unwell to behave in a way online where you're inflicting such hate to these complete strangers, such as, you know, myself and my friends. But like, you can't argue with crazy. You can't argue with people that ultimately are never going to believe a word that comes out of your mouth. And that's actually why I believe that more people who are not trans need to speak in these instances. Because like, people who don't like trans people don't want to hear from trans people about why they're valid, but they want to hear about it from people who aren't trans because they feel that shared common ground. You know, you have to lead by example.
Just put so succinctly, and thank you for that, because the issue where I get confused is why we've got this constant debate around femininity, and it seems that the debate around masculinity doesn't exist. We seem to know what a man is, or have defined what a man is. And I think that also plays into the trans debate, in that trans women are constantly brought up in and politicized, and it's not the same for trans men, and they are so much, I feel, should be a part of the conversation, not in a negative way, but understanding what transness is. And it frustrates me so that I think, just going back to that night, that for me that was someone kind of prying into your femininity or your womanhood.
I mean, I've forgotten about that experience until you actually just brought it up. Like, I think I'm quite numb to a lot of these things. And sometimes I'll have conversations happen, like, kind of to me or in front of me, and then a friend nearby sort of will go, "You okay? Like, that was a bit strange." And I'll kind of go, "Oh, was it? Like, I didn't really notice." And, like, I think as trans people, you get used to seeing it all. But I think she was mainly just bringing it back to biology. And I think some people who feel very confused about trans people bring back discussions about trans identity to bodily, as they refer to it, sexed indicators. And so they will come back to things like, "Well, you have a jaw that's 1.5 millimeters too wide to be a cisgender woman's jaw," or something like that. And it's like they come back to these completely patriarchal and very limiting beauty ideals that are also very westernized and very colonial about how dainty and how tiny a woman's frame should be in order to be valid. And like, I know cisgender women who are over 6'4". I know cisgender women who have PCOS and don't get periods. I just find that so much of this bodily debate about trans people and about trans women in particular really kind of takes away from the incredible work that feminists have done throughout history to try and take away this obsession about females' bodies and what qualifies them as being female enough. it's really reductive to what the experience of womanhood is for cisgender women as well, which, you know, it's so often it's the pay gap, it's the orgasm gap, it's, you know, being disadvantaged as you walk down the street and worrying about your safety. Like, you can't tell me that those things are only happening to cisgender women, because I know for a fact that they're not. And that's really what it comes down to. And it's interesting that you mentioned about trans men as well, because actually I think it was really helpful when the census report was published earlier this year for the first time to include statistics on LGBTQ people across the UK, because it said, and the closest estimates they could get on statistics of trans people in the UK said that there were 48,000 transgender women in the whole of the UK. And it said that there were also 48,000 transgender men in the whole of the UK. And for how often we see trans men come up in conversations, how often we see them be platformed, like, you would assume that there are barely any in this country, but there are just as many, still an extremely sparse minority, it's still less than 1%, but it's one that deserves to be recognised and included in conversations in a positive sense, just as much as we're talking about trans women as well. And yeah, it's very kind of erasive of trans masculine experiences, which of course are just as valid. And you know, it kind of makes sense to me as well, there are just as many trans men as there are trans women, because I think with the gender, with the sex split being so 50-50 or as close to, like, it makes sense to me that as a naturally occurring experience in transness is, there should be just as many people that stray from identifying as women when being assigned female at birth, as there are people that stray from being identifying as men who are assigned male at birth. So it adds up to me, like, it makes sense.
I wanted to ask, this just reminded me of something that I think about regularly. I have a very queer family. I have brothers who are gay.
I love your family.
we can get on the Cooper Heron cruise tour conversation soon.
My brother and I are trying to join and be like the Brady Bunch. We want that.
But so we both have the joy of having a queer family, which I think a lot of people don't have, and that's something that's really special to me. But when I think about the fact that, you know, all of my brothers are queer, and also we'll tell this, but we'll probably cut it, but that my dad was once like, oh, my granddad had a secret that he definitely took to the grave. What can it be other than he was gay? But if I believe queerness or gayness to be genetic, then are we looking at the same thing for sex? Or have I just made the most ridiculous connection in my head?
I don't think so. I think actually speaking about whether or not people are born gay or straight or trans, like, you know, I think what sexuality is, or what a lack of sexuality is, depending on how you're feeling about different genders or different individuals, I think it's about your proximity to other people. It's about the way that you're benchmarking yourself against other people. It's, I feel attraction to that person and that type of person, but not that person. And it can feel like such a primitive thing that we're born with, but actually I think that to suggest that everyone is born with a predisposed sexuality, even if that's heterosexuality within them, it's to suggest that they have a predisposed idea of the gender binary as a whole, which is made up. You know, the gender binary is a made up thing. And I think we're all actually liberated from it from the moment that we're, you know, I think from the moment that we're conceived to the moment that we're born, we're liberated from that gender binary. And the second we're placed into a very giant binary gendered world, we're exposed to it. I think that our identities and our sexualities start to form, and, you know, we follow what feels most natural to us. For some people, that's being straight. For some people, that's being gay. For some people, that's being bi, pan, asexual, whatever. And all of those are completely valid. But I think that I don't think that sexuality is programmed before birth. I think that the need to have sex might be, but I think that we're free from those expectations, whatever they may be, until we're exposed to the gender binary. Then we start to grow who we are. And then part of that is sexuality, and then whatever comes next is also just as natural. But I think with gender identity, I don't believe that gender identity is pre-birth, because I don't even think that being cisgender is something that you're born with. Again, I think that it's a case that you're liberated of the gender binary. You're free from it. I think about how I would identify, for example, if I was placed onto a desert island as the first ever person there, would I have known who I was if I hadn't had other people to benchmark myself against, if I hadn't been exposed to that gender binary, would I have known? And the answer is no, it would have just been me. And like, that's such like a you know, I'm so valid now in exactly how I am, and I love who I am. It's, you know, I'm loving every minute of it. I feel so free. I feel so right. But it's interesting how much of us and who we are is shaped by the world around us. And I think we can have a lot more compassion for people if we realize that, like, identities in every single form are so out of our hands that we may as well just freaking accept everyone. Like, we're all, it's that simple. Like, we're not trying to create problems, we're just trying to be. Like, is that simple to me?
It's interesting how people create problems.
I know it is. Yeah, just let me be hot.
I get I sit there in my darker hours and I'm like, you know, what was it that, you know, brought my sexuality? And I guess a lot of it might have been going to all boys boarding schools. But one of my favorite stories of all time has to be your 11 plus.
Oh, right. Yeah. See, yeah. So I obviously came out to my parents as identifying as a girl when I was 6, and it was before Google. Like, I'm 29 now, and like, this is, you know, it's very much, I think, the mark of a millennial is when it's the turning of the time of technology. Like, the start of my school life, no one had mobiles, and by the end of it, everyone had a mobile, that kind of thing. I think you're only a year above me. I can't remember, but...
Yeah, I'm 31 now. I can't claim I'm a twink anymore.
I think you can. I won't tell anyone. When you're in drag, just call yourself a MILF. That's what I think you should go by.
I mean, once you're past 30, if you're claiming you're a twink, you really need to get a hold of yourself.
At what point do people just start saying that they're like twunks and otters and stuff?
Oh, I mean, don't get me started on a...
Okay, twunks. I'm going to go back to my 11 plus story.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously I came out super young. I kind of digressed there, but I went to like state schools and I went to this mixed school. And then it got to the point where people were being tutored to do their 11 plus. And my county, where I'm from, Buckinghamshire, is like one of the last remaining places in the UK to still inflict this torture on these 10-year-olds, which basically qualifies them for access to a grammar school or access to a state school. State schools are, generally speaking, of a lower quality than the grammar schools in the area, which basically means if you're 10 and you fail the 11 plus, you feel like you're being sentenced to death. And then obviously there are kids with, you know, learning difficulties who are like excused from the 11 plus because it's a lot of pressure, and the tests are like, it's completely bogus, like genuinely. But I was having tutoring and my parents knew that I was trans. They were kind of like, oh, I want the best future for this, you know, for our kid. And I got to the 11 plus and I was like, if I pass this thing, I'm going to go to an all boys school and I just can't do it. So I failed on purpose just so that I would be able to go to a mixed school instead. And I think I could have passed. Like, I don't really know or care. It's such a ridiculous thing, but my parents were very understanding. They're like, how did you fail that? Like, you literally had tutoring. And I was like, oopsie, I don't know. Do you want to resit? No, I'm fine. I'll accept it. Yeah.
A, that's wild to me because as an 11-year-old, the only thing I knew how to do effectively was be good at exams. And I think that's what got me, you know, through private school and university. And that was like the only thing that constituted me. Oh, why is there a cat here? Okay, you can join the conversation. That was the only thing that constituted me. And I think, as you said, you measure yourself and your sexuality up against what, you know, other people. And I had no females to measure up myself against until I went to university, basically. And then I was, you know, so far in that there was no chance I could possibly come out. But yeah, it took... Actually, this cat can fuck off. You're going to ruin the conversation.
Hey, I can just hear that cat. Oh, it's so sweet. I can see this cat. I can hear this cat wandering around.
Go so away. Cute. Go away. We're recording. Ugh. Go on. Off you go. Ow. Okay, where were we? I was saying that I think part of why I came out so late at 24 was I didn't have any female influence in my life to help understand myself better. I had feelings for men at school, but I always put it down to the fact that, oh, there aren't any females present. So maybe when I go to you know, university and there are women there, I'll feel different. But it didn't happen. Yeah, it's just interesting that you were able to know yourself so early and it took me just time. But that's everyone's journey, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, I think that sometimes when I speak about my thoughts on only really developing a gender identity and or a sexuality when you see the gender binary in front of you, like, what I don't mean is that it takes seeing a trans person to become trans or seeing a gay couple to become gay, because, like, you can be exposed to zero representation and still your connection with yourself and the way that you perform your gender or the way that you, you know, experience your sexuality, like, those are just about you. It's not about how you can be exposed by that example. I never want to, I kind of worry that sometimes when I say that, like, I think people think that I think that being trans or being gay or anything is reduced to, like, that exposure and then imitating what you've seen. But actually it never works like that. If it was, then everyone would be straight, wouldn't they? Like,
it's true. Yeah. I think I guess what I was saying was that more I didn't have the support of women to be able to come out effectively.
Oh yeah, I mean, women are the answer, definitely. Women are 100% the answer. Oh, women 100%. Will save the world.
It's because of, you know, women that I am as proud of who I am and I am the person I can be, basically. I don't think many men have really shaped that.
No, I can't imagine so.
A little birdie told me that I should just say the words Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
And why was that?
We're pushing the boat out in the pink room. We're not only speaking to musicians anymore. Had an actor last week. Let's hear about your range of acting experience.
Oh my God. Okay, so my first ever experience of doing any kind of work was as an extra in film and TV. And my mum actually saw this advert and I think it was like Sunday Times or something, I don't know, like when I was like 8 or 9. And then she was like, oh, you know, like, my kids hate school, like, this could actually be a really cool experience for them if they end up in some films and then they have a bit of pocket money, or I don't know. So she signed us up for this extras agency, and it was at Pinewood Studios in Iver, which was right near where I grew up. And so my first ever experience of being, like, in front of the camera was playing a page boy in the second Bridget Jones film. And you can actually see me in the final, like, scene as the credits kind of roll. And then after that, I did a few different things. I was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You can see me in the trailer for that when you go on YouTube. Like, and it was really great because I remember, like, I think I did like 10 days off school or something. It doesn't count as like time off because you're going to tutoring and you're with all these like camp, like thespy kids that are like, that have like agents and stuff. And I'm just there because I've literally hated school so much that my mum was like, this could be cool for you. It could make you happy. And it did. Like, I think it was good fun. The only thing that was awkward was that I was quite an androgynous looking kid. Like, I was growing my hair and sometimes I'd turn up to the wardrobe and they'd be like, what are you? Like, are you a boy extra or a girl extra today? And I'd be like, oh, I guess still a boy one, sorry. yeah. So it's a good experience. Like, yeah, it was cool.
I feel like you have jumped into so many different experiences, from modeling to marketing to digital nomading, whatever that is, to, you know, organizing festivals. How are you such a goddess? How does one become as goddess-like as Max Queen?
Honestly, I think the key is just to stay single. Like, don't be letting any man distract you from your dream and what you want to do. I was in a relationship that ended at the start of last year and, like, it really knocked my confidence. It was very, very hard. And then since then, I've just been doing absolutely everything. And, like, I look at this life that I've built for myself now and I'm like, would I be living in Barcelona for a month, like, if I was still with him? No. Would I be having this much fun? No. Would I be watering myself down still? Like, yeah, definitely. Like,
I was on, makes it sound like I do podcasts all the time, but like I was on my friend Alex's podcast recently, How Not to Get a Boyfriend, little plug, she's amazing. But she asked me like what I do and how I describe myself. And I kind of responded with, well, I'm a professional transsexual. Like, and that's really like, I think all of my like streams of income that I have right now are relating to like trans advocacy or marketing at Jekka Black. That's this gender free makeup brand that I work for. Like, you know, like everything that I do has been so tied to my transness that actually I wouldn't have it any other way, because it's gone from being something that's been obviously quite hard. Like being trans is not easy. And in the current political and social climate, not fun, really not fun. But my life wouldn't be the same without it.
And yet I imagine the number of people in business or modeling agencies or, you know, film or extra work being like, no, don't come out as trans because that's going to affect your career negatively.
Yeah. So I remember I was first signed with a modeling agency in 2018, like around the time that I like came out of what we refer to as stealth in the trans community, because I transitioned when I was 16 and I just didn't disclose for like 8 years to anyone. And then, you know, it brings us up to 2018 and I was like, I am finding this really hard because I never know where I stand with people. Just for example, it's like, you know, when I was waitressing and then people would find out that I was trans, like a couple of people asked to change shifts so that they weren't sharing space with me. And like, you know, like people would out me in front of other people or they'd bring up trans debates in front of me, and dating was really hard. Like wondering if and when, how to tell a guy, like on the first date, third date, on an app, you know, like there's no blueprint on how the hell to do this if you're living without disclosing. And I found that to mean that I was having lots of surface level connections with people who ultimately I didn't even like deep down because they were so prejudiced to a part of me that they didn't even know existed. So I alleviated that and I came out, and yeah, life really hasn't been the same since. And it's been really positive. So I'm very grateful for that.
How did you get to the point where you realized that this had to be done for your own sanity and success as a human?
Yeah, I think I couldn't have really predicted like the success part of it on the other side. Like,
no, for sure.
It's been just me saying yes to different experiences that have come along, and it's been amounted to this great like portfolio of work that I'm really proud of. And yeah, I think what came along was this kind of breaking point with, I think I was just tired of having to find different ways to come out each time, particularly to guys and with dating. I just found that like, I don't feel that trans people owe anyone their transness. They don't owe anyone an explanation. They don't. They can benchmark their own timeframes on if and when and how they feel like they want to disclose or not disclose. It's up to them. But for me, like, I just felt really unfulfilled. I think I just had one experience too many with men making me feel like they were making my transness about them. And I was like, I'm so tired of not knowing where I stand with you people. Like, this is literally exhausting. Like, every time I start a new connection with someone, I'm like, am I going to get to a point where I feel comfortable not talking about this? And like, I feel like people were just using it against me. It was like kind of hot gossip whenever anyone knew about it. And I figured if I just outed myself, no one else could do that for me. And I was right. Like, it made me feel really, really powerful. I just happened to have too many outing experiences where I was like, what the hell am I even running from? Like, ultimately, I'm so scared to come out because I worry that I'll be isolated. But this is isolating right now. And I think I don't need to defend something that's actually just doing me more harm than good. So it was really just like about that. And then there was this amazing hashtag that was started with, you know, the Trump legislation was coming in and was really very challenging for trans people in the US, and things have progressively become much worse recently in the US. And there's this hashtag called the Won't Be Erased movement. And I was just like, what am I erasing my transness for? Like, it's actually a really special thing. And all my trans friends I really respect. I don't think they have anything to be ashamed of. I don't think I have anything to be ashamed of. And I just figured like I would just stop erasing myself. So I used the hashtag and I came out. And then since then, it's been a really liberating thing for me, and like so empowering to be able to speak out about things that really matter to me as well, particularly when it comes to like supporting trans kids in the way that I was supported. I feel that that support and that compassion, it literally is just base level compassion that parents are having for their kids when they support them if they're trans. Like, yeah, it's been a really empowering reclamation of the thing that once actually really did bring me down for a long time.
The trans festival that you organized, I thought was a beautiful space for people to learn and to grow and to, you know, find their community. And it taught me a very important lesson, I think. I think it was something that you mentioned to me about putting out positivity in spaces rather than focusing on the negative. And I wanted to ask about how that can be achieved. And also, a couple of times in queer spaces, I've experienced ultimate negativity coming at me from people that I feel should be supporting me.
Can you give an example of what you're referring to?
I'm not going to name any names.
You don't need to name any names, but, you know, what comes to mind? Would you, just for context?
I'll give you two examples. The first one was, I once did a brunch in drag at a venue in London. And I expected all the drag queens to support me in my efforts and my choices, because I felt like I was trying to support them in their choices. And when the other drag queens saw what they described as my hetty boxers, they basically laughed me out of the room. And I'd never felt so embarrassed, or I hadn't experienced such embarrassment in a space I was working in like that. You know, it felt very strange to me that there was a code on which I should have dressed as a drag queen or queer person or gay man. The other one was, we were at an event that celebrated trans performers. And at the end of the event, a trans individual got up on stage and didn't read the room and berated everyone in that room, rather than recognizing that we were all there to support them. And I just wanted to know whether, you know, as someone who's organizing festivals and events, is that something that you have to contend with as well, when people within your own community tear you down, maybe because of internalized issues or because of external factors?
Yeah, I think it's really unpleasant when there's in-community fighting. And it's something that I really feel quite frustrated by when it comes to, you know, there's such like a battle in the trans community right now between people who do and don't think each other are trans enough. And like, I just don't think it serves any of us to be placing that much judgment on each other. I think we all need to lead with the same level of compassion that we need to receive. And like, we're receiving so much judgment, we're being given so much discourse about our bodies and if we're doing the right or wrong thing with them all the time, that we can't call the shots on whether or not someone else is trans enough. This is just an example of something that I've seen that I think has been so negative and so detrimental. It's very divide and conquer, as far as, you know, the far right are coming for us, and we all need to just pull together. We all ultimately want the same outcome, which is just complete liberation from this nonsense. And yeah, I remember that experience with the person who was very angry, and they definitely didn't read the room. I think whenever there's unwell experience such as that one, or, you know, like the other queens reading you for wearing boxers, like, we just have to remember the place that it comes from, which is just, it's a lack of happiness. Like, well people don't do that. Like, if you're a well person, if you're a happy person, you really don't project that nonsense. You don't feel the need to bring other people down. So I think that's just finding a state of comfort in the fact that, like, you're not in the same headspace that they are. And one day they're probably going to get less crazy and look back at the time when they were that mean, but they're on their own journey with that and they're not there yet. And that's on them. I find that in these experiences, like, all we have control over is how we respond, and it's worth letting go of the things that we can't control. But I find that so ironic about the comments about your underwear, because the concept of drag is that you can wear whatever the hell you want. Like, it's performing and existing in. It's like, we are liberated from these clothes in the gender norms that are like prescribed to them, or, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's literally fabric that's been sewn together. And then someone said, that's for men. Like, you're all, by and large, drag queens are men that dress up as women. Like, and you have the nerve to laugh at someone who's got boxers on? Like, are you serious? That's ridiculous. Like, oh God, that's so ironic to me.
It is ridiculous. And it's, I think it's my psyche that I hold on to this, to these bullshit moments. I think that's my hurdle I've got to get past is...
Oh yeah, it's not about you.
Yeah, it's not entertaining that kind of behavior, because it happens too often and it brings me down way too much. I wanted to talk about a poem you wrote, and we don't have to if you don't want to, but I think it's beautiful.
Oh, we can talk about it.
Okay.
I know the one you mean. It's the one that's on my Insta grid, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember I shared that. I literally, so yeah, I just put that in my phone notes one day. I was like, just sat and I was just mulling over things. I think Trans Awareness Week was like the following week. And I was just like, I just want to share a few thoughts on this. I can recite the poem if you like, I don't mind. You're just like a veggie chicken nugget, the lesbian said to me. You see, you're just like the real thing. You'd never know you'd gone meat free. You're very convincing, you know. The straight man said to me, would love to give you a go. Keep it between us. Now, please, top me. You'll never be a woman, the government says to me. Let's start some lies, bring your demise. Get rid, it'll be easy. We come numb to the insanity, wish our safety came for free. While the world burns, the tables turn, yet still I will be me.
Go on, let's start with the first stanza.
So that experience was with someone who I'd known for actually a few years from my hometown. And I was at this party. It was just like a house party. And like, she was there with her girlfriend and a few other, like, there were a few other like queer women there. And it was a really cool vibe. And then there were a couple of guys there that were kind of hitting on me. And then suddenly they just started moving away from me. Like, they'd got the ick because someone had said that I was trans. And then they just started like becoming uncomfortable with themselves in my company. I was like, wow, like, you must really fancy me. So then I kind of brought it up. I like said to everyone in the room, I was like, listen, like, I know that everyone in here has something to say about me being trans. Like, it's actually really exhausting as a trans person when other people make your transness about them. Like, Does anyone have any questions? Because I'd rather we just get this out of the way now and then we can just move on with the rest of our night. And like, I don't know what guts came over me in that moment, but I was ready to like, I was ready to read anybody that had anything to say. And obviously everyone was like, no questions. It's all fine. No. Okay. Yep. No, don't worry. And I was like, okay, good. Well, let's all just stop talking about it then. And then I got chatting to this, the lesbian girl later on was saying to me about it. She was like, props to you for like calling everyone out and outing you in there. Like, I was like, this is literally such bullshit. Like, I came out so that this would stop happening. And then she was like, you know, like, I think that people have a problem with trans women because they don't realize, like, she was like, it's just like when people don't want to go vegetarian. It's because they say, I would never have corn sausages. I would never do it. And then they try them. It's like you get them to have a corn sausage and they don't even realize they've had a corn sausage. And then they go, wow, that meat substitute is so close to the real thing that I would never have known that I'd consumed corn instead of having actual meat. Wow, maybe I'll make the switch. Maybe I'm open to this now. And I was like...
Okay, well,
I was kind of like absorbing this information. I was like, she was basically saying to me, you're such a close substitution for womanhood that I don't understand why people have a problem because you're just the same. And she meant it in a good way, but it was kind of like delivered in a way that was kind of messy. And like, I kind of just loved her being honest with me. I was like, cool, yeah, I guess. I know, I knew what she was saying. She was comparing me to just, yeah. So that line on my poem, you know, you're just like a veggie chicken nugget, the lesbian said to me. You're just like the real thing. You'd never know you gone meat free. I use the meat free part because I've had my SRS and I thought that would be what people would lean on, like, oh, she's gone meat free, you know. But actually it was about someone comparing me to being a corn substitute for meat. So yeah, that's the story there.
If you were a McDonald's meal, what would you be?
I'd be a Filet-O-Fish.
I should have guessed that one.
Which one would you be, babe?
Oh god, I just want to go with the Big Mac.
A Big Mac.
Yeah.
I thought you said Big Man.
I just think I'm three slices of bread rather than two. Do you know what I mean?
Work.
Continuing on with the poem.
Summarizes all of my dating experiences. Like, lol. Honestly, it's so ridiculous. And you know, like, it's weird. Like, I was talking about this on Alex's podcast as well, but trans women will sometimes say to me, like, what's it like being post-surge? And I kind of explained to them, like, you basically need to be ready for men to still make you feel weird about your own body. Because that's what it really comes down to. There's this understanding. It's very turfy. It's very patriarchal. It's complete nonsense. It's very porn driven. that people are transitioning just so they can become hot women so that men will want to fuck them. And it's like, I personally am so repulsed by men at this stage in my life that I don't care if I never date again. Mm. But and my womanhood is here regardless. Like, my SRS was something that I did for myself. But that line of my poem really pertains to the experience of men talking about you as this subcategory of womanhood that exists only in their porn search history. And ultimately they open with, wow, you're trans, whether this is on, let's say, Tinder, or, you know, let's just say it's Raya. They'll open with like, cool, do you want to top me then? And I'm like, it's exhausting, like having this really accelerated like sexual expectation just because I'm trans. Like, it's like, you know, just talk to me like a normal fucking human being. Like, yeah. Ask me how my day is. Like, I don't care. Like, it's just like they think of me as like a delivery service the second they see the fact that I'm trans in my bio. And I have it in there sometimes because I want to disclose, but then I sometimes keep it out just for the sake of like sparing myself that very confronting expectation that I'm gonna, like, I don't know, go to a sex party with them on a first date or something ridiculous. Like, if that's your style, that's good for you. But like, just because I'm trans, that doesn't mean that I'm up for that.
That's really interesting, because on Grindr, which is the most accelerated, awful sex space I've ever experienced, there are a lot of men just looking for trans-only experiences, which, you know, I don't deny them that interest. But it's interesting that, you know, even on your Tinders and your Hinges and your Fields, I guess, that, well, especially Field, that when you disclose your transness, it accelerates the sex element.
Yeah, it takes the app, even the, you know, the more like vanilla ones, like Hinge, whatever, it, you come across these like, I don't know, like maybe like recruitment consultants that live in Clapham, and like they went to Thailand once and they've hooked up with a Thai lady boy and they've always wanted to relive that experience. Then finally they come across you and they're like, wow, this is going to fulfill what I've thought about ever since I was 18 and I had that time. And it's just like, you know, I hate to profile people in that way, but it's just, that is a conversation I've had so many different times with those men that think they're so exotic as well for like swiping right to me, and I'm like, you're just not that special, babe. Like, honestly, no. Whoever told you you were special was wrong.
Oh, poor men. I just feel sorry for them at this point.
Yeah. And honestly, like, the thing about the being asked if I can top someone, like, you know, all my sexual experiences that I've had in my life have been post SRS at 16. Mm. And like, sounds young, but it was the right thing for me. And like, I actually wouldn't have had it any other way. But, you know, just my own experiences I've had, you know, I wouldn't change it. But yeah, it's like, people will open with that. Like, so many straight men actually just want to be topped by trans women or by other men. Like, I don't know, they have this kink. They want to, that's their sexual appetite, and no shame in it. But like, it opening with that after telling me that I'm convincing, and so many men have said that, is just like, oh, it's so tired. It's like, it's ridiculous. And, you know, even now, like, sometimes on apps as well, guys will be disappointed because they'll ask me if I've had the surgery. And like, I think having a preference for trans women that haven't had the surgery is fine. You know, lots of my friends have not had the surgery and have very fulfilling sex lives with, you know, very like fun men to hang out with. I don't know. But the second I say that I have had the surgery, so often they're like, well, then what's the point? No, thanks. Like, it's like they see this, they're like, if I'm going to hook up with a trans person, it may as well be a person that's actually like still trans in the way that they want the trans women to be, that sense of sexual fulfillment. And like, I can tell that they're disappointed sometimes because they see me and they think that I'm hot from my pictures. And then they want, they're imagining like what I've got between my legs. And then I'm disappointing them because I've conformed to this very cis, like, expectation of bodies or whatever. And like, it's like, wow, it's almost like I didn't transition to fulfill your needs, you know. It's like they can't comprehend that that's the case.
It feels very similar to, there are a lot of straight men who, they just want their dick to be stuck by another guy and they will enjoy that. But it's almost like this kind of aggressive desire that isn't fair to anyone, especially the person that's taking your smelly dick cheese.
Oh god, well, it just makes sex so transactional, doesn't it? Yeah. It's like, you're going to do this for me because I'm going to do this. Then like, whatever, never going to, you know, and it's fine. Sex can be very transactional, like casual sex, all for it, whatever. But like, it's so demanding and so entitled. And I think it really speaks to like the straight male experience that so many guys feel like they can just pose that forward and then get their way and then onto the next thing. And I'm like, imagine walking through the world with that much confidence. Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane to me.
It's reminds me of, in my darkest hours, I will use Grindr as a kind of tool for what I think is gratification. And my darkest experience, I think, was a guy who was like, oh, we'll do anything, but I don't kiss. And in that experience, I was just like a sex doll for him to experiment. And then he came in my ass, and his first words after that were, well, now I know how wrong it is having sex with other men. And I was like...
It wasn't that wrong a moment ago when you were having an orgasm, was it? Right, like, honestly.
Right.
Oh, but, for God's sake.
But it's fine, and I'll tell you why. Because I am going to put it into my art and write a song based on that experience. I've already written it, actually.
Yeah. Have you?
I have. And
that's very Lana Del Rey of you.
I know, I know. I'm ready for my Madonna ray of light, kind of Lana sex obsessed, Rina Sawayama power, and kind of Caroline Polachek beauty era.
Yeah, like hot, sad girl era where you like shed yourself of the shame that's been put onto you by men. I just think right. That's so good.
Right, but it's also quite like white women on in linen on the beach. Yeah, anyway, so I've wrote, the lyrics go, anonymous face, anonymous race, which is a reference to racism that many people experience on Grindr. And then it goes, at least now he knows fucking guys is so wrong.
Word. Honestly, go off.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the full thing. I'm gonna stream it on repeat.
Please. She needs that.
I want to make it number one. I'm going to make it number one just from me listening to it again and again and again.
I'd like to move on to the third stanza, which I think is...
Oh, yeah.
Very powerful.
Yeah, I loved when I shared it. So many people were resharing it, and it made me feel really good about that. Like, I often feel a sense of imposter syndrome about my transness because I transitioned in the way that I did. And like, as I move through the world, people don't perceive me as trans. And like, that privilege, like I always say, like the privileges that were afforded to me during my youth, both in terms of emotional support and like medical support, those privileges will be protecting me for the rest of my life. And I'm so grateful to that. But it does also leave me in this space now where I'm often a little bit too cisgender red to be trans, but I'm also too trans to be cis. And that like adjacency to both experiences in a lot of ways, because people don't perceive me as trans, can be difficult to navigate. But actually having a lot of those shared struggles with so many of my trans friends is really, it's almost like a form of trauma bonding. And it's actually really important that we are not afraid to say how we feel about these things, that we don't feel like our words are being taken away from us. So yeah, I shared that on my grid on Trans Awareness Week last week. And yeah, loads of girlies were sharing it. And I was like, wow, like lots of people resonate with this. That's so nice. And like, it gave me a taste of like what it's like when people put work out that people really like connect with. Like, it might seem kind of trivial just dropping something onto my Instagram grid, but like, I really appreciated how many other women were like, love this. Like, I really felt this. This made me smile on the bus. You know, it's like, it's great. Like, that's, yeah, that wasn't why I did it. I did it really just for myself, so I could be like, kind of, you know, fuck being trans sometimes, but sometimes it's great.
Yeah, it's, I think the power of using your art to express yourself and sharing that is, that's what, you know, changes people's mind and can help people grow and, you know, come to terms with certain things as well. I know that I wouldn't be able to process like that grinder experience without being able to put it into artistic terms. So I find it very powerful. And does this mean that Maxine is moving into new territories?
I don't know. Currently, the only territories that I'm interested in are my marketing job here at Jack Black, which I love. And like, I feel so liberated right now in that I'm able to just go anywhere.
Let's give Jack Black the props it requires.
Sure. So I'm marketing manager at Jack Black. I was the first ever employee in 2020. And our founder, Jess, she started Jack Black as a safe space makeup studio for trans women. And then, she launched Jack Black as like this gender-free retailer that sells, for example, our correcting conceal palette that can be used to conceal beard shadow. So everything that we do and the opportunities that she's created, even with employing me as her first ever employee, have been considerate of the needs of the trans community. And, last year, as Ash mentioned, we did Trans Festival, which was a really cool event. Ended up being on the hottest day of the year, but it was a really cool lineup of panel talks that were all hosted by me. I hosted seven panel talks that day. I was absolutely wiped out at the end of it, but it was incredible. And like, we had like Sean Fay and Danny St. James and Kenny Ethan Jones and Juno Dawson and like Freddie McConnell. We had so many incredible people. Reese Lyons, like, definitely look her up. Like, everything that we do, although we're not necessarily specifically a trans brand, like, it's about progressing the way that we can meet the needs of the trans community in every sense.
Jack Black is amazing to me because it fully represents that line, trans rights are women's rights. It's not as though the makeup brand is purely only for trans women, and the number of women who, trans or not, who require beard coverage or eyebrow blocking. I think it's great the way that it expands conversation around what is possible with makeup. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. Like, we always just refer to ourselves as, gender-free brand. And what we want to help further is this concept of like a gender-free utopia where people can just express themselves in any way that they want to and like dress in any way they want to, use whatever products they feel comfortable with. And even our packaging is pretty like gender-free. We try to make it as non-confronting and as unisex in its styling as we can. So yeah, that's what we're all about. Like, that's entirely our mission, really. So yeah, you mentioned about like kind of what I'm onto next. So like, a big part of my life is this role that I have, and I've been doing now for nearly like 3 years. And I'm working as a digital nomad. You mentioned about that as well. So like, currently I'm in Barcelona for a month. I'm planning a trip to Berlin for a month. And then I was thinking about going to LA. Like, I honestly just want to take this opportunity. Literally, I have this opportunity to just do this job from anywhere. And I'm like, even just from leaving London, I'm so much happier outside of that country right now, outside of the UK. It's so nice to escape. And like, that's my priority, really. But besides that, I will just continue saying yes to the opportunities as they come, because I hope that there will always be a next big thing.
Maybe one more question. How can we work together to shut down this bizarre questioning of trans women's rights and establish a new discourse, both politically and, in the journalism, that celebrates basically what, as you represent, is a superpower?
Oh my God, it's like, it's a mission. It's going to take a village. It's going to take people not being quiet anymore. And it's going to take a lot more men. Statistically, when people bring harm to women, it's men. Statistically, when it's people fantasizing about women, like, I can't remember if I mentioned already about the 75% increase in trans porn consumed globally on Pornhub in the last year. Not to bring shame to anyone that watches porn with trans women in it. I have friends who have built careers off of sex work. I'm pro-sex work. But the same people that are consuming from trans women so often for free are also doing the same harm. These are people's friends, sons, fathers, boyfriends, ex-boyfriends, cousins. Like, these are people that ultimately have the power to create rapid change, and they are standing in the way from that happening by being silent. So ultimately, I think the solution has to come from men, and it has to come from as well from the gays. I think that so often queer people feel like they get a free pass from talking about these things. And I see so many pronouns in bios, and it really frustrates me because for me as a trans person, I see that as a really clear indicator that people are doing much more than that. Like, if you have your pronouns in your bio as a starting point, that says to me that you will use whichever pronouns someone says are theirs. You are by default saying, I'm going to respect you by that. I'm not going to question on it. And I'm a safe space. This is a safe space for you to know that I'm on your side. But you better also be contacting your MPs. You better also not be subscribing to forms of news which are detrimental to the well-being of trans people. Certain broadsheets and tabloids in the UK have, I feel, you know, the blood of Brianna Gay on their hands. And the way that trans people are constantly disadvantaged in society as a minority group that makes up less than 1% of the UK's population, this is not a fight that we can do on our own. And the main things that people can do to take action are by sharing information consistently, platforming voices from within the community to make sure that we're able to quash the number of voices that are speaking about us without us. Mm. Like, we need to be platforming more trans people. And I feel like I'm sometimes aware of the opportunities that I'm given to be platformed because I'm someone who is like, I say things in a way that's not as confronting, but actually I don't believe that trans people owe the world manners. The world does not give manners to trans people. It does not give social graces. And I think that whatever way that trans people feel compelled to share about their experience, and sometimes feel very angry to talk about their experience, is completely valid. And that needs to be platformed more than yet another author, for example, talking about the reasons that trans women are bringing an end to womanhood or something ridiculous like that. Like, you know, there are so few of us. We are not creating the problems that the media lies about us creating. And unfortunately, the world's on fire. And I think it's also a distraction tactic from that. So we have bigger fish to fry than trans people. Let's just focus on something else, I think. But dismantling those forms of hate when we see them is so important.
100%. And I think I wanted to shout out Lucia Blake. Has taught me so much about trans women.
And like, you have another one?
Bitch, I got more than you. Like, I'm literally, shit. I'm surrounded by dolls.
Fucking love Lucia.
Lucia is an icon. Lucia has changed what it means with trans pride to be trans, I think. Mm-hmm. It's something, you know, to be celebrated. Well, I think trans women have taught me what femininity is.
Yeah.
With Lucia, the power of standing up for what's right. Whether that be trans rights, or she has, in so many occasions, walked straight up to a bouncer and be like, that was not cool, that's not professional, that's not how you should behave. You know, just no fear for speaking up and saying what's right. And too often, I suffer from this as well, too often we kind of go through life and don't help the person across the road. Mm-hmm. I know that's a bad example, but more and more, I think people are living for themselves, which I totally get. But I think it's important to check your privilege and then see where you can support others. And I think trans women have taught me that.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about trans women showing you what femininity is. Because I think so much of femininity is about choice. And like, for trans women to choose femininity, for trans women to like choose this path, pursuing like the most authentic version of themselves, like, how is that not feminism? That is like, that's ultimate like liberation from like the gender binary and just living on your own terms. Like, that is what feminism is striving to be. And I think we do it like on our own terms, and that's like, yeah, an incredible example of what we should all be striving for, I think, that level of freedom.
I hope you've learned as much as I did in that final hour episode of The Pink Room. A round of applause and huge appreciation goes to Maxine for her time and openness. Let's continue recognising the femininity that trans women possess and bring an end to the rising anti-trans rhetoric. Raise the issue, speak to your peers, and support trans rights.
The Pink Room is a World of Wonder production, produced by Michael Pressman and Chris Cairns, and edited by Jesse Caron. Thanks to the following people who have helped me throughout Season 2. Jess Walinsky, Stephen Sims, Pip Roussan, Tatiana Pozuelo, Nina Madley, Harry Tyndall, Kalisha Quinlan, and the team at Lalo. I'm Ashkenazi. If you enjoyed Season 2 of The Pink Room, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends. And remember, Queens, what happens on tour definitely gets shared in The Pink Room. Ta-ra for now!